Marketplace is supported by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen.
Today, the president asked Congress to let him use military force against the Islamic State with, it should be said, some very specific conditions.
It is not the authorization of another ground war.
You know what it is, though? It's a business opportunity. That's what it is. From American Public Media, this is Market Flags.
Marketplace is supported by Citrix GoTo Meeting, connecting people and businesses in face-to-face online meetings from any device. More at gotomeeting.com. By Epson, with workforce all-in-one printers for business powered by Precision Core Technology. Workforce printers designed for home and offices and work groups. Epson.com. And by Battelle. Battelle's NeuroBridge technology is helping a paralyzed man to move again. Learn more at battelle.org.
In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today. This one is the 11th of February. Great, as always, to have you with us. The president took pains today, both in his letter to Congress and in the text of the AUMF, the Authorization for Use of Military Force, to make sure that everybody knows he does not want this to be a long, drawn-out, and expensive campaign against the Islamic State. Still, when you talk about military operations of almost any kind, costs can get big really, really quickly, in no small part because of the way the modern American military is set up to fight. Marketplace's Adam Allington breaks that down for us.
Air power is likely to be the primary tool for combating the Islamic State. Gordon Adams studies national security at American University in Washington, D.C.
This is a military operation which predominantly involves burning fuel, shooting munitions.
Any boots on the ground will likely serve in advising and training missions and therefore won't require as many supporting contractors.
We're not talking about setting up large bases again.
Todd Harrison is a fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments.
So we won't be bringing in, you know, the Burger King and, you know, all of the base amenities.
Harrison says we currently have about 3,000 troops in Iraq, the cost for which varies depending on whether they're used in combat or supporting roles.
In Iraq, we were averaging around $600,000 per year per soldier on the ground. And in Afghanistan, it was about double that.
Mackenzie Eaglin studies defense readiness at the American Enterprise Institute. She says despite the new role, the military will still employ contractors.
As a general rule, the U.S. employs roughly one contractor to support every soldier that is deployed.
Eaglin says those contractors will likely fill roles such as security, logistics, and intelligence analysis.
Using the law of averages and a force multiplier, you could assume a contractor costs about 1.5 times the amount of a deployed soldier.
Eaglin points out that contractors cost more in the short term, but less overall, because unlike a soldier, once a mission is over, you can take them off the books. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
All right, from vital national interest now to slightly less vital national interest. Jon Stewart, as you know, has decided to do something else with his life. Comedy Central announced last night that Stewart is going to leave The Daily Show sometime this year. This is, on the face of it, a story about a cultural icon moving on. It's about how we get our news and what we want in our news, but it's also a corporate story. The company in question being Comedy Central's corporate parent, Viacom. Marketplace's Andy Baxter has that story.
Jon Stewart's departure is a big deal for Comedy Central. Here's Matthew Harrigan, an analyst with Wunderlich Securities.
Yeah, the whole company was Comedy Central. I mean, you'd be looking at the stock price, you know, getting crashed, you know, today.
Viacom's stock dropped, but Harrigan says it didn't tank. Comedy Central is only one piece of the Viacom enterprise. Harrigan estimates it pulls in less than 10% of overall revenue. Still, the timing of Stewart's announcement isn't great. Ratings have been sliding at Comedy Central and at other big Viacom networks like MTV and Nickelodeon.
It would have been better to have had this happen, when some of the other networks were, hitting a little bit better.
Part of the problem, people watch traditional TV less often. As viewers' eyes move on, so do ad dollars. James Dix is an analyst with Wedbush Securities.
You could say, here's just yet another exclamation point. To the general storyline that, TV advertising at Viacom is in trouble.
From a corporate perspective, Dix thinks Viacom had to anticipate Jon Stewart's retirement and make contingency plans. He thinks Comedy Central will end up fine. Whether it sticks to the Daily Show's fake news format? Joe Bonner, a securities analyst at Argus Research, says that's an open question.
I mean, do they change the whole format of the show to fit a new personality, or do they try to fit a new personality into the show?
But Bonner says, given The Daily Show's brand equity, he can't imagine Stewart's departure dooming it. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
A little choppy and unsettled at the corner of Wall Street and Broad in Lower Manhattan today. We will, as always, have the details when we do the numbers. The European debt crisis, which is to say the present iteration of the Greek debt crisis, has arrived at that point where finance ministers from the 19 countries that use the euro met today around a big table in Brussels to talk things over. There are reports, by the way, this afternoon from CNBC that they have reached a deal to keep Greece in its bailout plan, which had been in some degree of doubt, as you know. Making the case for Greece at today's talks was that country's dynamic new finance chief, Yanis Varoufakis. Varoufakis has had teaching jobs in the U.S. and Australia. He has also been described, completely without irony, I think, as the coolest finance minister on the planet. Marketplace's Stephen Beard takes a closer look.
Varoufakis has bounded onto the political stage, not like a finance minister at all, more like an action movie star.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill.
Varoufakis, with his bald head, athletic build, and feisty manner, reminds some of Bruce Willis of Die Hard fame. One German newspaper called him a sex icon, roaring around Athens in his motorbike leathers, radiating the sort of classical masculinity you usually find only in Greek statues.
Don't know about Greek statues because he is wearing a leather jacket rather than a fig leaf, but he certainly has a certain charisma.
Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank. He says Varoufakis is propelled by much more than his personality or his 1300cc Yamaha.
He's riding the zeitgeist, I suppose. There is a feeling, not just in Greece, that austerity has gone too far.
Varoufakis was always going to oppose the deep cuts in public spending which Germany and other European creditor nations imposed on Greece. He's very much a left-winger. Indeed, he describes himself as a Marxist. But Professor Monajit Chatterjee, his doctoral tutor at the UK's University of Essex, says take that with a pinch of salt.
People are scared of him because of this Marxist label that he bandies around, and it's almost done deliberately, done in order to say to people, look, here I am a Marxist, but you know what? I'm really a cuddly toy.
Is Varoufakis playing games? Well, maybe. His speciality is game theory. He's even worked for the American company behind this computer game, Counter-Strike.
We now have direct confirmation of a disruptor in our midst. Unsophisticated minds giving him such dangerous poetic labels as the one free man.
The Valve Corporation hired Varoufakis for his game theory expertise. A useful skill set in the current negotiations. His friend and former colleague at the University of Texas, James K. Galbraith.
It's not a bad background to have. How much practical use it is in a particular moment, I don't know.
But Galbraith rejects the claim that Varoufakis is playing the so-called madman strategy, making crazy demands, threatening to bring down the euro in order to extract greater concessions from Greece's creditors.
No, that's not true at all. There's absolutely nothing, I think, mad or, for that matter, opaque about the position taken at this stage by the Greek government.
Galbraith describes Varoufakis as one of the most interesting intellectuals on the planet. Many Germans, though intensely wary of his demands, also seem to find him personally intriguing. But the German whose opinion counts most is Chancellor Angela Merkel. Will she succumb to his magnetism? Professor Chatterjee, Varoufakis' old tutor at the University of Essex, remembers one of Margaret Thatcher's sayings.
One can recall one of Thatcher's favourite phrases is, this lady is not for turning, and I think about Merkel, one might say, this lady is not for charming.
Energy, charm, intelligence and glamour. Observers say Varoufakis has these in abundance. We should know soon whether that's enough to win a significantly better bailout deal for Greece. At the European Desk, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So it's been snowing in Boston, as you may have heard, quite a bit. In fact, 78 inches so far this season, with another storm coming tomorrow. Boston is long past the ooh, isn't it pretty stage, and well into the when's it all going to go away stage. That is the job of, among others, Frank Ippolito. He owns and runs Ippolito Snow Services in Boston, Mass. Mr. Ippolito, good to have you with us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I imagine you've been running around like a crazy man the past couple of days.
Yeah, I would say that's a very accurate assessment, and a lack of sleep is something I'm learning how to deal with.
Yeah, I bet. Your phone, first of all, just to get down to the business of this, your phone must be ringing off the hook. You have more business than you can handle.
Absolutely. We're getting a number of calls, probably, you know, in excess of 50 to 75 a day. We can't even manage respectfully talking to everyone and just even declining their inquiries.
Wow. What are they looking for? Just to be plowed out, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, I would say commercial companies are calling us, and you would say they should already have a contract. We're way into winter as it is. So those companies are calling because their current contractor or current engagement has fallen apart in some way because they can't handle the massive amounts of snow coming at them. And then the other side of the coin would just be people that can't get out. Or they just can't get to work, or they're snowed in completely.
How many folks do you have out there driving trucks and rigs and whatever you got on the roads?
Yeah, so we have a crew of approximately 25 folks, and I would say half of those folks are out in trucks and plows and in bobcats, and the other half are on the ground as part of managed services crews stationed across the city at certain key accounts.
What's managed services?
This is where we really manage flake to, we call it flake to flake service, and that the first flake falls, we have a team there in front of a retail store or a high-end residence that we're there for the entire storm, just pushing snow to the curb and keeping them clean the whole time so it doesn't build up.
The big story, of course, out of Boston has been you guys running out of places to put the snow. So when your flake-to-flake folks are out there shoveling, where do they put it? They can't just dump it in the street, right?
Yeah, no, it goes to the curbside, and then we come and pick it up through the end of the day and haul it away.
Well, and I imagine hauling it away is an extra line item on their bill, yeah?
It is. It goes in the category of additional services, and that's basically where we spend all of our time between storms.
So if I'm a company and I have, a parking lot full of snow and I have to pay you to take four truckloads away, how much extra is that going to cost me?
You know, four truckloads, it doesn't seem like enough. We typically are hauling 10 to 12 away, even for a small lot. So I would tell you it's going to cost you somewhere in the range between $2,000 to $4,000 at a minimum.
Wow.
Because they're, because you can imagine these services are sought after.
There's no getting around it. Snow is expensive, huh?
It's very expensive, and we're feeling it now. Our customers are telling us their budgets are dry, and one customer was even telling me last night, you know, if this doesn't stop, we're not going to have any flowers or grass or any budget for the summer. It's going to be a barren, storefront here.
Wow.
So it's pressing on their budgets.
Well, Mr. Ippolito, good luck to you, and get some sleep if you can before tomorrow night, huh?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care. Frank Ippolito, he owns Ippolito Snow Services up in Boston, Massachusetts. Coming up,
I sat down in 8C, and she sat down in 8D.
Oh, but it was so much more than just an airplane ticket. Our new series, The Transaction, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's off 6 points today. That's less than a 10% for the blue chips. Closed at 17,862. The NASDAQ rose 13 points. That's about a 0.25%. Ended things at 4801. The S&P 500, we'll call it flat, finished at 2,068. Walmart off 1% today on news the world's biggest retailer plans to expand up in Canada. Energy companies were hit as oil prices fell yet again. Exxon slipped 0.4%. Chevron spilled about a 10%. AOL was off almost 10.25% today after reporting fourth quarter earnings. The company beat expectations but disappointed on revenue. Online travel operator TripAdvisor moved up 0.9%. Fourth quarter revenue beat expectations there. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note up to 2.02%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees to choose from offered 100% online with 6 start dates a year. Learn more at online.asu.edu. And by Farmers Insurance, out to educate everybody about common insurance gaps so that no one falls victim to them again. Learn more at farmers.com/innercircle. Farmers Insurance, know the gaps. And by Robert W. Baird & Company. Employee-owned and independent, Baird has kept clients' financial interests first since 1919. BairdWealth.com has more information. Have something to say about one of our stories or want to suggest your own? Find us on Twitter at Marketplace or join us on Facebook to interact with producers, reporters, and the hosts of Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. Did consumers start off the year shopping? The Commerce Department reports on retail sales for January. Events at the Lincoln Memorial commemorate the 206th birthday of the 16th President of the U.S. And February is Potato Lovers Month. According to the National Potato Council, the first potatoes arrived in this country in 1621. So glad they made it. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. From the pages of the Washington Post this morning, dietary salvation of a sort. The Post says an FDA advisory panel has changed its mind about cholesterol. It's not that you can go hog wild here, but maybe worry just a little bit less about cholesterol in your diet. Among the most excited, the egg industry. Sally Herships reports.
If we were writing a blockbuster movie about the egg industry, I know, just bear with me. The villain would be cholesterol.
It certainly has been an issue that has been on every single agenda, the topic for every single meeting we've had in the egg industry over the last 30 years.
Kevin Burkham is Senior Vice President of the American Egg Board.
Cholesterol is really the reason that the American Egg Board was invented.
By egg producers in the mid-70s, there was an egg crisis. America's consumption of eggs had plunged from around 400 eggs a year in the 40s.
Fast forward to 2012, and it's down to 250 eggs.
Phil Lumpert is editor of SupermarketGuru.com. He says after years of mixed messages about nutrition, telling consumers your product is actually healthy, again, can be tough.
Because what we've seen before, whether it's about obesity or heart disease or cholesterol,
or sodium or sugar,
is lots of confusion. This message has to be really clear.
And heard. If the government publishes new dietary guidelines, they probably won't have much effect on their own. That's according to Mark Cotter. He's CEO of The Food Group, a food marketing company.
To be quite frank, the understanding of the dietary guidelines in terms of awareness is under 10%. In the country.
Cotter says it's up to the egg industry to sell itself, and it seems to have figured out the right recipe. The American Egg Board's Kevin Burkham says last year egg sales increased by $500 million. As its slogan says,
the incredible edible egg, even more incredible.
I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
We, that is consumers, and car companies, are creatures of habit. We have been buying pretty much the same basic car made the same basic way for decades now. Every once and again, though, you see a car that's a bit different in a fairly fundamental way. It's missing a wheel. Jordan Golson wrote about the three-wheeled variety of automobile recently for Wired. Jordan, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Somebody, I think, needs to explain the allure of three-wheel cars to me, and that lucky somebody is you. There are two aspects, right? Consumers and the makers of the cars. Let's break those down. Why do car companies want to make these things?
Well, car companies are always looking to sell something that's different. If you look at an average car, a sedan on the road, and you ask someone who's not a car person, you know, what's special about this car? A lot of times they'll say, oh, it has four wheels and four doors, and
that's right.
That's as far as they'll be able to go. But you build a three-wheeled car, And then immediately they can notice, it has three wheels. That's different. Yeah. So maybe you can differentiate yourself in the marketplace that way a little bit better.
All right. What about consumers then? Because, I mean, you know, you get two people in there and they're full, and then what?
Yeah, that's a lot of the problem. People typically buy their cars so they can haul around their family and their stuff.
Right.
And a three-wheeled car doesn't really do that very well. And then if you want to sort of have the wind in your hair and the sun on your back, well, you can buy a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And so the three-wheeled car is kind of it's got all the bad parts of a motorcycle, and then it has all the bad parts of a car, and it doesn't really solve the problem.
How are these things classified by the DMV? Are they motorcycles? Are they cars? What are they?
Traditionally, if you go back 30 years or so to when the three-wheeled car was a little more popular, especially in England, they were classified as motorcycles. And they were popular specifically because they were taxed as motorcycles, so they were cheaper to own, and you only had to have a motorcycle license to ride them.
Mm.
Nowadays, they're treated more like cars if they're enclosed. So they've sort of fixed the rulings to make them a little more common sense.
And is there like a safety certification thing too? I mean, they can't possibly be classified as safe as a car.
Well, that's part of the problem and part of why you don't see them as often. Back in the 1970s, there was very little in the way of safety regulations and things that we have now. And so if you were in a three-wheeled car like maybe the Reliant Robin, something really lightweight, you basically have about as much protection as you would have on a motorcycle, which is to say none.
Yeah. There are some that look really, really cool, and then there are some that are not. Toyota's got one it's working on. It's called the iRoad. That just, it doesn't do it for me.
Part of the theory, especially with ultra-efficient cars or electric cars, is, well, if you can take a wheel away, then you're taking away some of the rolling resistance.
Right.
And, you can make it a little more efficient and get a little more bang for your battery buck, so to speak. And they're working on it, and maybe it'll come to fruition, but for now, it's pretty much just a concept.
Ever going to catch on, or are they always going to be a novelty?
If the car companies can figure out a way to solve a problem that no one else has solved, you might see one that's really popular.
Yeah.
But until they do that, you know, the demand just isn't there.
Jordan Golson at Wired Magazine. Jordan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The transaction is arguably the fundamental element of capitalism. You give somebody something, they give you something back. Sometimes, though, it's more than just money changing hands. Sometimes the stuff we buy is the start of a great story, which is why we're calling the series that we're starting today The Transaction. Eventually, these are going to be your stories. But to show you how it's done, we're going to start things off with one of our own, our producer Tommy Andres' brother, Matt.
I'm Matt Andres from Champaign, Illinois, and this is a story about two tickets. Back in the fall of 2003, my friend Richard and I were attorneys at a law firm in Milwaukee. Richard got tickets from a client to go to a Milwaukee Bucks game and invited me to go with him. Neither one of us was very excited about the game because the Bucks weren't very good, but we went anyway. When we got to the game, we sat down, and there was a girl next to us with an Indiana Hoosiers t-shirt on. Richard was always looking for a date, and he had gone to Indiana University, so I said, "Hey, you ought to turn over and talk to that girl." He looked over and he said, "I think she's on a date." And I said, "Well, so what?" So Richard turned over and said, "Hoosiers!" They had a nice conversation and I didn't pay much attention to it. I probably said hi once briefly. It was a terrible game, so we left and I didn't think any more of it. About 3 weeks later, I was at Detroit Metro Airport waiting for a flight back to Milwaukee after Thanksgiving. And I saw that same girl, again in an Indiana University t-shirt, standing against the wall waiting for the same flight. I'm not normally the kind of guy to go over and talk to random strangers at an airport, but I recognized this girl and went over and talked to her. I could tell that she couldn't quite place me. I said to her, "Hi, I think you and I sat next to each other at a Milwaukee Bucks game a few weeks ago." She said, "Oh, yeah, I think we did." We had a nice conversation in the waiting area, and then they called boarding for our flight. And as we were getting on the plane, I said, "Well, have a nice flight." And she said, "Yeah, have a nice flight." And we sat down in our assigned seats,
And I sat down in 8C, and she sat down in 8D. We talked the entire way to Milwaukee, and as we got off the plane, we talked some more. And as we were waiting for our luggage, we continued talking. When we both had our bags, she handed me her business card with her cell phone number on it. We started dating in January of 2004, and to make a long story slightly shorter, 5 years later, Richard, my friend from the basketball game, officiated the wedding between me and Karen Biddle, the girl in the Indiana t-shirt.
I'm Karen Biddle Andres from Champaign, Illinois, and this is the story of an Indiana University t-shirt. That stuff doesn't happen very often. I totally by chance sat two seats away from him at this Bucks game.
In an arena of 18,000 people.
And then 3 weeks later.
On one of the busiest travel days of the year.
We're seated next to each other on an airplane. This is so cliched, but it really kind of felt like it was meant to be.
Yeah. We are still married today and have a fantastic little boy named Eddie. Can you say hi, buddy?
Papa.
Karen and I are very happy, but I always tell Richard, if you had just spent a little more time talking to that girl next to you in the Hoosier shirt, I might have been officiating your wedding instead. She thought you were pretty cute.
All right, so the only way this series is going to work is with your help. So go ahead. Tell us how a simple transaction led to something surprising or unexpected. It can be happy, it can be sad or thoughtful, silly, whatever it is. We want to know about it. Our website is marketplace.org. There is a spot there where you can tell us your story. This final note on the way out today, which comes with the observation that I had a boss in the Navy once who only held meetings standing up, kept them short and on target, he said. That apparently wasn't a bad way to go, because a data graphic I saw from the software development company Atlassian today says this about the average workplace meeting attendee. 39% of people sleep during meetings. I don't understand how that works. 45% felt overwhelmed by the number of meetings they have to go to, which I get. 73% said they did other work during those meetings, which I think is called multitasking. I don't know. We've got a link to the data graphic and the data sources as well. It is at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price. In today's uncertain markets, institutions, advisors, and individuals choose T. Rowe Price to find global investment opportunities. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence. And by Constant Contact, a proud Marketplace sponsor for 7 years, committed to helping small businesses meet their goals with email and online marketing. Learn more at ConstantContact.com. And by RingCentral, the cloud communication system that integrates with CRM, sales, and support applications like Salesforce, Zendesk, Box, and now Google for Work. Drive business forward. RingCentral.com.
All right, we're out of here. Got to go to a meeting. No, I'm just kidding. The Dow up 6 points today, less than a 10%. The NASDAQ up 13 points, 0.25%. The S&P 500 basically flat. Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Michael Raphael, and Charlton Thorpe engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody.